the New York Ska Jazz Ensemble with their version of Take Five, the legendary song of Dave Brubeck. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Thursday, January the 24th, a day that the Defense Secretary, Leon Panetta, announced that effective in 2016, all positions in the U.S. military, including combat, will be open to women. The landmark decision was unanimously approved by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the governing body that controls all branches of the U.S. military. Well, yesterday we took a trip down, it wasn't memory lane, but we did take a trip. It was an interesting trip, witnessing Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, soon to be the outgoing secretary, well, the former secretary. She leaves as soon as John Kerry, if he is to be approved. He's being, of course, vetted now by the Senate for appointment as her successor. But she appeared before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee yesterday, and it was a kind of an interesting thing that, of course, partisan. We had the Republicans on the attack, the Democrats on the defensive, and Clinton herself in very obstreperous. Senator McCain described her as her usually combative mode. So let's just revisit that a little bit, where she took some heat yesterday in the Senate. And this was the criticism of Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, who really lit a fire under Hillary Clinton. Let's hear what he had to say.
We can do.
Senator Paul.
Thank you for appearing, Secretary Clinton, and I'm glad to see your health is improving. One of the things that disappointed me most about the original 9/11 was no one was fired. We spent trillions of dollars, but there were a lot of human errors. These are judgment errors, and the people who make judgment errors need to be replaced, fired, and no longer in a position of making these judgment calls. So we have a review board. Review board finds 64 different things that we can change. A lot of them are common sense and should be done, but the question is, it's a failure of leadership that they weren't done in advance, and four lives were cost because of this. I'm glad that you're accepting responsibility. I think that ultimately with your leaving, you accept the culpability for the worst tragedy since 9/11. And I really mean that. Had I been president at the time and I found that you did not read the cables from Benghazi, you did not read the cables from Ambassador Stevens, I would have relieved you of your post. I think it's inexcusable. The thing is that, you know, we can understand that you're not reading every cable. I can understand that maybe you're not aware of the cable from the ambassador in Vienna that asked for $100,000 for an electrical charging station. I can understand that maybe you're not aware that your department spent $100,000 on three comedians who went to India on a promotional tour called Make Chi Not War. But I think you might be able to be aware of the $80 million spent on a consulate in Mashar al-Sharif that will never be built. I think it's inexcusable that you did not know about this and that you did not read these cables. I would think by anybody's estimation, Libya has to have been one of the hottest of hot spots around the world. Not to know of the request for securities really, I think, cost these people their lives. Their lives could have been saved had someone been more available, had someone been aware of these things, more on top of the job. And the thing is I don't suspect you of bad motives. The review board said, well, these people weren't willfully negligent. I don't think you were willfully. I don't suspect your motives of wanting to serve your country, but it was a failure of leadership not to be involved. It was a failure of leadership not to know these things. And so I think it is good that you're accepting responsibility because no one else is. And there is a certain amount of culpability to the worst tragedy since 9/11, and I'm glad you're accepting this. Now, my question is the U.S. involved with any procuring of weapons, transfer of weapons, buying, selling, anyhow transferring weapons to Turkey out of Libya?
To Turkey? I will have to take that question for the record. Nobody's ever raised that with me.
It's been in news reports that ships have been leaving from Libya and that they may have weapons. And what I'd like to know is the annex that was close by, were they involved with procuring, buying, selling, obtaining weapons? And were any of these weapons being transferred to other countries, any countries, Turkey included?
Well, Senator, you'll have to direct that question to the agency that ran the annex. And I will see what information is available. And
you're saying you don't know?
I do not know. I don't have any information on that. And, you know, with respect to personnel, Senator, you know, first, that's why we have independent people who review the situation, as we did with the Pickering and Mullen ARB. And all four individuals identified in the ARB have been removed from their job. Secondly, they've been placed on administrative leave while we step through the personnel process to determine the next steps. Third, both Ambassador Pickering and Admiral Mullen specifically highlighted the reason why this is complicated, because under federal statute and regulations, unsatisfactory leadership is not grounds for finding a breach of duty. The ARB did not find these four individuals breached their duty. So I have submitted legislation to this committee, to the Congress, to fix this problem so future ARBs will not face the situation.
But here's the problem. The review board has all these recommendations, but there's one thing they failed to address, and I think you failed to address, and it sets us up for another tragedy like this. They should have never been sent in there without a military guard. This should have been an embassy like in Baghdad in a war zone, and it should have been under military guard, significant military guard, Defense Department command. I don't think the State Department's capable of being in the war zone and protecting these people. I still don't think that. I think another tragedy could happen. I think another tragedy could happen in another war zone around the world. I think someone needs to make an executive decision. Someone needs to take leadership, and with that leadership should be that you shouldn't send them in with no Marines. You shouldn't send them in with Marines or to guard records, not people. You shouldn't send them in with the same kind of ambassador or embassy staff that you have in Paris. I think that's inexcusable.
Well, Senator, the reason I'm here today is to answer questions the best I can. I am the Secretary of State, and the ARB made very clear that the level of responsibility for the failures that they outlined was set at the assistant secretary level and below. The administration has sent officials to the Hill more than 30 times. We've given as much information. We've been as transparent as we can. Obviously, we will continue to brief you and others to answer any and all questions that you have about going forward. The reason we put into effect an accountability review board is to take it out of the heat of politics and partisanship and accusations, and to put it in the hands of people who have no stake in the outcome. The reason I said make it open, tell the world, is because I believe in transparency. I believe in taking responsibility, and I have done so. And I hope that we're going to be able to see a good working relationship between the State Department and the committee going forward.
Thank you, Senator.
Well, that was Senator Rand Paul, who was kind of emblematic of the reception that Hillary Clinton got from Republicans when she went before the Senate committee, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, yesterday morning. Yesterday afternoon at 2 o'clock, the House Foreign Affairs Committee had its stern, and leading up to that, here we are about to hear an excerpt from an interview from MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell interviewing Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey, previewing the kind of reception that the Republicans were getting ready to give Mrs. Clinton. Here's Chris Smith.
With only a short break to recover from the grilling that she got from the Senate this morning, Hillary Clinton is going to get another turn this afternoon in front of the House. One of those asking the questions is New Jersey Republican Chris Smith, who joins me now. Congressman, thank you very much.
Andrea, good to see you again.
Good to see you. Tell me, what do you want to hear from Hillary Clinton?
Well, I watched some of the Senate testimony. I read the Secretary's testimony. We're glad to have her on Capitol Hill. But there's still so many unanswered questions. You know, it's as if we never learned the lessons. Back in 1985, Admiral Bobby Inman issued the Inman Commission report. In 1999, Admiral Crow and I chaired the hearings after our embassies got bombed in Tanzania and in Nairobi, Kenya. 200 people dead, 4,000 wounded and injured. Many of the same recommendations that were made by the most recent Accountability Review Board were made back then. So it's a matter of implementation and leadership, which seems to be lacking, and we really still don't know what the Secretary knew prior to September 11, 2012. We know what she did afterwards, at least that's what she talked about today, but there were huge questions about security requests that our ambassador in Libya had made to the department. Did she know about it? Those answers still are forthcoming, and they have not come.
Well, one of her points today, I think in answer to Senator McCain or one of the critics, was that it's Congress that has held back money or approval. Let me play a little bit of that.
Sure.
Since March 2011, congressional holds have been placed on programs for many months for aid to Libya. We've had frequent congressional complaints. Why are we doing anything for Libya? It's a wealthy country. It has oil. Disagreement from some sources that we should never have been part of any UN mission in Libya. Currently, the House has holds on bilateral security assistance, on other kinds of support for anti-terrorism assistance.
I mean, as she put it, doesn't the White House, the administration, and Congress have to get their act together as to, if you want more security, approve it, budget it?
Obviously, we could always do more, Andrea, but I was the author of the Secure Embassy Construction and Counterterrorism Act of 1999. Since 1998, we have tripled from 1,000 to 3,100 diplomatic security agents and personnel. It's a matter of leadership and the proper deployment. So there was a little misdirection there in that answer. When it comes to security for our ambassador, Christopher Stevens, who tragically lost his life, and the three other individuals, and those who were wounded, that's a matter of prioritizing the resources that you have and ensuring that when the ambassador makes a request, when his team makes a request to the department, those funds and that deployment of personnel are forthcoming. Added to that, there's still questions about the military. 7 hours after the attack began was when two of the individuals, the Americans, died. I could fly from here to London in 7 hours or so. We couldn't get military assets there to protect Americans who were under siege. So there's questions about what President Obama was doing at the time during those long 7 hours. And there's questions about why we didn't have military personnel there to protect our people who were in dire straits.
Well, Congressman, the military is pre-positioned in Stuttgart, not even close. They say, the military, the Pentagon, and the State Department both say, because it would be worse for us diplomatically to have a big footprint there. Do you reject that? Do you think we should have forward basing? And do you think we should have Marines at these outposts?
Well, again, we still don't know what went on prior to September 11th in terms of the requests that were made and especially how they were acted upon. Three individuals at least have been put on administrative leave because of mistakes that were made. But how high up did it go? I'm shocked, frankly, that in an era where we want transparency, that Secretary Clinton herself was not interviewed by Thomas Pickering and his Accountability Review Board. You know, you don't just interview mid-level people about what they knew and when they knew it. You have to go, I think, even higher and find out what happened throughout the entire chain of command. And again, since there were early indications that this was a hot spot, that the February 17th Brigade, which was one of those charged with protecting us, our military, I mean our diplomatic people, was of very, very questionable allegiance. Who vetted them? Those kinds of red flags should have triggered either our ambassador not going to Benghazi that day or other actions being taken, especially when you talk about having more people there to provide protection. You know, he had less people in Benghazi than he did a year before when he went there. That's unconscionable. And so, mistakes were made, in my opinion and in the opinion of many others, but we're all talking about, and I watched the secretary. She was very smart in talking about what we need to do, but what was or was not done prior to the initiation of these hostilities, this terrorist attack against Americans.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there and watch your hearing this afternoon. Thank you very much, Congressman.
Yes, and that was Representative Chris Smith from New Jersey, who basically gave us a preview of where he and other Republicans in the House were going. Here's finally a very short clip from Representative Jeff Duncan, who was quite frank about what he was thinking. Representative Duncan is, of course, a Republican from South Carolina. Here's what he said.
Why did four Americans die? What was so important that Ambassador Stevens, if he knew there was a security threat in Benghazi, that he went there on September 10th and 11th and gave his life for our country? What was so important for him to go to eastern Libya, knowing all these threats, knowing the memos are clear? And I think you misspoke earlier when you said that you didn't know of any requests that were denied for more security. June 7th, email exchange between Ambassador Stevens and John Moretti when he requested for one MSD team, or actually an additional MSD team, and the reply from John Moretti said, unfortunately, MSD cannot support the request. There was a request made for more security, and it was denied on June 7th. And so, Madam Secretary, you let the consulate become a death trap, and that's national security malpractice. You've said
national security malpractice. They did not mince words yesterday at all. Now, say what you want, there are some very interesting things that we need to take a look at, because I think there are some legitimate concerns here about whether we know everything there was to know about the Benghazi attack, what's behind it, and some other related issues. This is where you come in at 1-888-874-4888. I would like to see if we can engage you. We gave you this as your homework assignment to watch the House meetings to get a sense of where things were going in the afternoon. But, you know, when all is said and done, despite the fact that she was very combative and very forceful and got a lot of favorable press, I should say, when I looked at it, it seemed to me that there were at least two very strategic things that happened, and they were not in her favor. The Republicans got her to own the debacle, essentially. She could not escape it. It now has her fingerprint, her footprint, her handprint, what other kind of print there is. The Clinton print is on this disaster, and it has been firmly associated with her name. That is to say, in marketing terms, her brand. She has been branded in connection with, as the Republican, Rand Paul, I always try to call his father's name. But Rand Paul said that this was the greatest disaster since 9/11. That will not really sound too good come 2016 if she's a presidential candidate. And secondly, they definitely opened the door and let us in on the systemic problems, administrative and bureaucratic problems that were running rampant through the State Department under her watch. And therefore, they painted her as a person who, while getting all of the attention and so forth as a nation's highest diplomat, was really not in charge of this department, and was not well informed herself about what was going on. She deflected all of that by saying, well, of course, I mean, I asked for an independent inquiry, and we just learned, again, the independent inquiry, Congressman Jeff Duncan reminds us, is never included her. So she hadn't been talking to anybody. And this was the first time that Hillary Clinton was actually compelled to explain something to the American people. And it was done literally at the last hour, because before you blink, she'll be out the door. Let's take a look, a critical look, at Hillary Rodham Clinton's performance yesterday, insofar as we were able to observe it. And chime in your thoughts. I'm going to ask you to be very pointed in your analysis today. 1-888-874-4888. We will take this break, come back to your calls right away. We're looking for brisk discussion. We're moving along now on this concept of being prepared to debate, but you have to be informed in order to debate. All right, be back after this. This is Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're taking a look at yesterday's it was for all intents and purposes very dramatic, but it was a mere sliver of a look into the Benghazi, the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya. And for the first time, we're getting directly from her own mouth Hillary Rodham Clinton's reactions and views and an accounting for her role as the Secretary of State in this awful tragedy. Now, lest I sound naive, let me be real clear. We know that this is politics and that people have a vested interest, especially now where the lines of demarcation are so deep between Democrats and Republicans, that anything at all to shame or embarrass the Obama administration is great stuff for the Republicans. But I didn't get a sense that that was really what their motives were yesterday. They were reacting to the fact that the Secretary of State simply was not available for questioning by the Senate. And increasingly, it's a criticism of the Obama administration, where people believe that decisions on an executive level are made outside of their ability to control or even outside of their knowledge, when in fact, as the Senate confirming cabinet-level appointees, they believe they have a right to have some kind of information, especially something involving the death of Americans abroad. This is big, big news. It's huge. But Hillary's demeanor was such that, you know, she came across as a very bossy, angry, in-your-face kind of person. She tried every so often to put a tamper on it to make sure that it didn't get way out there, but it was way out there enough to turn a whole bunch of folks off. But what became really clear was that it was as if there are two Americas. There's what's going on in the cabinet and the White House, which is one place, and then the rest of America that decisions are made and we don't have to account to anybody. And this is a definitive issue. It really is. It's a definitive issue because the role of Congress, especially in matters of war or military action, the role of the Senate is to advise and give consent. But we've had time and again the executive branch, the president, taking action, not just Obama, but previous presidents taking action including declaring war and or involving the country in war. And, you know, the people just don't know about it. The Senate is not consulted. And, you know, hey, if we could declare war, I'm the commander-in-chief, and I can just press a button and make things happen. And that's the way it's been going. So it's a sense of reaction to that as well. We got very clearly here a very disturbing picture of Hillary Clinton and her approach to leadership. And although she said that, you know, I assume responsibility, of course, it's the middle-level people who took the fall. She had no problem throwing them under the bus, saying, hey, I didn't read all the cables. I didn't know everything. But, you know, the people who did and who failed to tell me about it, well, look, they're no longer on the scene. They are on administrative leave. And the implication is that they soon will be terminated. But so far, they still have been on full pay. And they just merely shuffled into another department. The outrage about this incident is, one, there is something happening here. And again, Rand Paul hinted at it. In fact, he asked it about what exactly was the nature of what was the nature of the existence of that annex? What was it for? Why was it so important to Ambassador Stevens to go there on that day, and even to the point of requesting additional backup so that his security could be at least guaranteed? Jay, you are from Staten Island, and you're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Treese, I think you are on the right course, and if you would examine the Mrs. Clinton, the former senator, now Secretary of State, you were correct. When she came to become the New York State representative, that completely was illegal from day one. And then when you move it up to becoming a senator, she's a shadow president in the White House, the Clintons, exactly what you said. But if you move into Libya and Benghazi, the four Americans who died, I have condolence for them. But the fact of the matter is, these people went in, they were Navy SEALs. I'm a former military person myself, honorably discharged from the Army. I know what they do. But when you are in a State Department and you go in subversively and you rip out the guts of a Libyan president and government and destroy that country and then set up a shadow government, you expect to be wiped off the face of the earth. So, Mrs. Clinton, like you said before, if this was Mrs. Rice, and she came up to the senators and the Congress, this all-white club of American representatives, House of Danger, whatever you want to call it, they would have destroyed that black woman. They gave Hillary Clinton a pass, whether it looked controversial or not. She was a shadow governor. They are running the White House over a black president, a mixed-race president, Mr. Obama, who I voted for twice. But at the end of the day, you are correct. These people does not believe that all those Libyans who were murdered and killed in Maine are equal to those four Americans who died. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, what is disturbing, again, is a pattern that has been established, and increasingly it is that the White House makes independent decisions. And again, this is not unique to Barack Obama. We had George Bush, we had Bill Clinton. In fact, a lot of decisions were made outside of the knowledge and participation of the people duly elected to represent the people of the United States. This is very clear. With respect to Hillary Clinton, part of her attitude, her arrogance, comes from the fact that as I call her, at one point, she was the co-president of the United States. In fact, she was given a portfolio without being elected. Her husband appointed her to essentially author a health care bill, which she did, again, unconstitutionally, which is why I say it ought to be destroyed. It ought to be destroyed and something else put in its place, because that bill was put together literally in secret. Nobody was asked, well, what do you think ought to go? It was not debated in Congress at all. This is Hillary Clinton deciding what ought to be the policy. And guess what? It is a policy. So that attitude of, I can run things, and I don't need anybody's permission to do anything. I call my own shots, and I do what I need to do. Leave me alone. I'm woman. Hear me roar. Okay, we got that. But the feminist in Mrs. Clinton disappeared over the situation with Susan Rice. Susan Rice took a very hard fall, and with it, her professional reputation and all of that. Not that I think that any of these folks are the best people that we could find for the job. But insofar as they're there functioning in those capacities, at least we can appreciate the fact that when the attack did occur, some really funny stuff started happening. The president wasn't able to give us a cogent answer. The Secretary of State was simply off the scene completely. She had nothing to say. And the person who was the face of the administration really got basically sucker punched. And that was the end of her. So the people are entitled to know what happened here, because it's a bigger story. It's big enough that there were four Americans who died, including an ambassador. But there's a huger story, and we got a glimpse of that from Hillary Clinton suggesting that what might have been in place or beginning, the preparations were beginning to establish a kind of nucleus of operation that would control Africa as well. We know that many of the Islamists who fled Libya ended up in Mali. We'll come to that at another point. We've discussed the situation in Mali just, cursorily, but we'll do a far more detailed analysis there because it's warranted. It's so complicated, because the failure of foreign policy, U.S. foreign policy, and we have to see that, is at the root of so many other major catastrophes. The United States supported the ouster of Muammar Gaddafi, and then it became more than an ouster. It was outright assassination. You can't expect people to just tolerate that and go on as if nothing ever happened. Ed from New Jersey, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Nutrice. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Oh, great to hear your story. And, you know, I appreciate your insight as always, because I believe that they're, like most Americans feel, that Hillary Clinton is acting just with a level of arrogance. And I saw that leading up to the whole current 9/11 Benghazi issue. I started to just recognize her as arrogantly going around the world and on the backs of Americans, dropping checks off and doing it sort of in a way of self-entitlement without seemingly the approval of Americans, if you will. Maybe that's how the game works. I don't know. But after the Benghazi attacks and everything had come out alluding to the video, I really think that this current stage show as of yesterday would have just, you know, she would have just preferred it to go away, kept up the rhetoric about the video, but I think it's a big inconvenience to her. And, you know, the last thing I just wanted to say was when she broke down about after the four caskets had arrived at the Air Force Base, you know, when I watched that in live TV, it seemed like she was very cold. I was a little bit, you know, taken back by her approach more to give credence to what her position was and how these four victims of, you know, what she felt was, you know, perpetrated in the best interest of our country, that that was just another day in the life of, you know, these service people. And it felt very cold. So when she was crying and saying she was hugging people and, you know, falling over herself at the caskets, I didn't see it. I guess if I hadn't, then I'd be like, oh, well, I guess she was upset. She wasn't upset. That was a lie. And I just don't trust her, and I just generally don't, you know, respect her.
Well, how do you account for the fact that she is immensely popular, more so than perhaps any other public official at this point, even more popular than Barack Obama?
Because, you know, Utrice, I really do believe, like so much is stated from all the hosts on the network, that the media, you know, the regular media out there just tells stories and people latch on to it. So they don't necessarily see beyond that facade that the regular media creates. And they just go along, oh, yeah, she's going to run for president. Yeah, I think she's good. She looks nice, whatever. They don't really look beyond what is the face value of anything going on. So most people don't necessarily scratch beneath the surface like you do all the time. And, you know, your listeners really appreciate that. And I just get a lot of information and a kick out of your stories. And I really get engaged. So, you know, thank you again.
Well, from your perspective, Ed, what would you say was the most significant thing to you that came out of yesterday's hearings?
You know, in all fairness, Utrice, because I work overnight, so I wasn't able to watch it. And frankly, I just didn't care to watch it, only because I saw it as, again, an opportunity for her to, you know, take a position of, well, look, I did my job. And, you know, like you had alluded to, you know, this is going to be her last hurrah after leaving. And I just felt it was a little bit of an additional insult. So to tell you the truth, I felt that some of the people grilling her were strong, like Rand, Rand Paul. But I just think that she was prepared. I think that she had enough time to prepare all, you know, and you know how if you have to face something and you really get prepared to face it, I think that's what she basically did, so that she knew that the grilling was going to be tough at times, and it was just going to be, I think she's cold. I think she's just a very cold-hearted individual. And I don't mean to be speaking so negatively about her, but I just don't really have anything positive to say about any of these leaders that, you know, just choose to use us in their overall game, when at the end of the day they don't see suit that, you know, we're the ones that are paying for all this nonsense, and we don't seem to be getting legitimate response from anything of this leadership anymore, so... You know, that's my
But that is
it.
That is actually, I think, behind the biting questions from the Republicans. And they are, I think, well within their right and reason to be offended that this administration refuses. It's not just the Republicans who are stumbling blocks, it's the Democrats. It's everybody playing this game, you know. And here is a very serious situation. This is not a joke. This is not, you know, it is being treated, you know, and you got that from Hillary Clinton, and she actually said she blew up at one of the questioners yesterday.
I remember. That was one part that I saw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, saying, you know, essentially, listen, get over it.
Right.
There are four people
That's
dead,
all news.
Okay? And we just had to figure out what to do. It becomes a procedural matter to her. She does not understand that what people are trying to grapple with is, how is it possible that the superpower of the world, that positions itself in the world community as a leader of nations and all of this stuff, what is it that she's missing about the fact that these four individuals, now, you have to understand, this fight was about 7 hours long. These guys put up one heck of a fight, and they died very brutally. And you know, how is it that this level of insensitivity,
mm-hmm.
you know, resulted in the deaths of Americans, and the ambassador was the official U.S. representative in another country? Now, we have lots of questions, and you heard one coming even from the senator himself about, well, what was this annex all about? They're going to mm-hmm. get to the bottom of this. I tell you, right. This is not finished yet. There is a kind of, you're sensing there's a story here that isn't really fleshing out just yet. But to treat it as a kind of administrative review, as if we're not talking about the World Trade Center. Okay, yes, we know that blew it about. But really, let's talk about what should happen from now on. Is that kind of a feeling you get? Do you not understand, nobody, what's going on here? Thanks so much, Ed, for calling. I'll take a quick call from Buzz from Florida.
Hello. Yes, how are you? I am very happy that you're discussing this. I listen to your show as often as I can on the internet, but the question that I have is, I don't know or didn't watch Hillary yesterday, but what about the stand down order? As a former Marine, that had to come from a political source and not a military source, if in fact there was a stand down order, which was reported early on. Do you understand the question?
Yes. Okay. There was that was reported. Again, we didn't get confirmation of that in the hearings, but there was allegedly a stand down order. But in fact, the Marines or the special ops people who were there, who ended up fully engaged, were in fact in violation of the stand down order when they were actually putting their lives on the line to protect the ambassador. So that is another huge question. It still has not been resolved. So I'm saying be prepared. I think they're going to go deeper with this, and they ought to, because I think we will see a whole different story unfolding about U.S. involvement in that region, and now literally as a kind of vanguard into an explosive presence, pardon the pun, in Africa. And that's what we were hearing from our friend Gerard Messier, who was with us earlier this week, talking about Mali and what's going on in Mali. So, yes, the stand-down order was not yet verified by Mrs. Clinton. And I think that she should have been compelled. And I think the one-day testimony just is insufficient. This is a huge, huge issue for the United States on any number of levels. Thank you, Buzz. Thanks for calling in. Well, that brings us close to the end of our program today. Please, when you look at these stories, take it all in. Don't forget, remember the environment. You pay attention to the person's demeanor, their body language, their attitudes, and that also tells a really interesting story. But from Hillary Clinton yesterday, despite the fact that she was positioned in the media as being really, you know, a tough chick who just dispatched Congress, the fact is that two significant things happened that she cannot get rid of very easily. She was made to claim and reclaim responsibility for this deadly affair. And number two, on top of that, she has to deal with it when she would declare her candidacy for the presidency in 2016. Thanks so much for joining me today. We'll see each other tomorrow. And, of course, tell everybody you know about PRN.FM, and let's grow this family. Coming up next, stay tuned for Mike Fader with Occupied Territory.